This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Lee Tree Lin. Homelessness is an issue that every city in the world grapples with, and it made headlines in our country when the authorities in KL tried to forcibly impose a 2-mile radius ban around the city centre on soup kitchens. A group of young individuals wanted to make a difference, so they went about providing food and job counselling to homeless individuals in the city of 9 million during their free time. They call themselves Street Feeders of KL, and they're here to explain why homelessness is an issue that is close to their hearts. I'm joined now in the studio by Tan Lee Swan, Anantha Raj Rajakumar, Gary Liu, as well as Auntie Muntaj, who is representing, I suppose, the experience of what it's like to be homeless in Kuala Lumpur. Welcome to the show, gentlemen and lady.
Thank you.
So how did Street Feeders of KL come about? What was the inspiration behind it?
Well, for me personally, it started about 15 years ago. My mom and I, we had this, she started soup kitchen in Bukit Nanas, and we used to feed Mondays to Fridays during lunch, about 100, 200 homeless. And so I guess that's the essence of how I began. Fast forward to about maybe 3 years ago, and a bunch of friends of us, we should do something about this, because we started noticing them on the streets, and we felt no one was really...
giving a helping hand yeah. to the people, you know.
There are a lot of established soup kitchens doing good work around KL. Why did you not volunteer for them instead in, you know, choosing to start your own thing?
I think the difference with us and a soup kitchen is we actually go onto the streets and we see where they live. So we are approaching them instead of asking them to come and, you know, line up for soup kitchens. And it really gives a chance to really see what is it like, what their living conditions is like. So I think for me personally, that's why I decided to join.
And I think, for example, like when we feed them, the act of feeding them is just merely a means of reaching out. We're there to really listen, to see how we can help them, get them back on their feet, reintegrate them to society. And I think that's probably one of the things that really sets us apart from all those mobile soup kitchens out there.
Because a mobile soup kitchen, I would say they are more just giving out the food rather than reaching out, talking to them. But that's what we do. We actually do sit down with them and talk to them also.
Did you have a model that you were following, you know, when you decided that, okay, I want to, you know, reach out as opposed to ask them to come to, you know, was that something that just happened organically? You just thought, okay, this is probably the right way of going about it, or was it something that you, you know, had a model that you based it upon?
Well, I think within the team that we've had, it has and always will be a people's movement. And I think that was the foundation or the ethos that we kind of went about with. We felt as young working adults, that's what we want to do. We want to listen to them. We want to reach out. And we're just kind of doing what we know best and how we would like to be treated on the street sometimes.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. By going to them rather than them coming to us, you know?
There are an awful lot of social issues in the city. I mean, if we wanted to pick one out of 10 or 20 or 50, you'd be hard-pressed to pick. Why was homelessness the one that really stuck out to you and you thought, okay, this is what I want to make a difference in?
Well, for me, I think I've traveled a fair bit, and there are famine in different parts of the world, and they're safe, the dolphins and the trees, but I guess there's something that you could relate to with seeing a physical person, seeing where they're coming from, and it is in your own home, they are in your own backyard, they are our people after all, they are Malaysians. So I think that is really the key point that why we decided to go with that.
Yeah, I agree with Gary on that, in a sense that when I travel a bit also, and when I went to other countries like Indonesia or Cambodia, I see a lot of them, you know, on the streets. So, and my mom always comes and tells me, charity starts at home. So where better than your own home in KL?
You're all working professionals holding day jobs. It's not as if this is your full-time thing. How much time do you manage to devote to street feeders?
Well, each street feed takes about 3 to 4 hours each. But that's just the actual street feeding. For us, there is a bit of planning that goes before each street feed. Normally, it starts about 2 weeks before, and we normally have a meeting maybe about 2 to 3 hours per meeting. And apart from that, just in our own personal capacities, we go out and look for, you know, funding for suppliers, anyone who's willing to join and lend a hand.
I say it's a fair balance. I mean, we balance our work, our families, and this is equally as important, I guess.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's a small, very small sacrifice to pay, I would say. Yeah.
Lee, you made reference to some of the process. Could you tell us how Street Feeders operates?
Sure. So we used to do one street feed each month, but now we've ramped it up to two street feeds each month. We normally have about 50 to 90 volunteers per feed, and we try to feed about 200 to 300 homeless people each time. We normally give out a rice packet, bottle of water, some bread, clothes, if you have any, and some basic medical supplies, so like Panadol, your minyak kapak, your mosquito coils, so things like that. We are now about 260 people based on our Facebook page. That's us.
And you're still growing.
Where do you head out to in Kuala Lumpur? How do you pick the spots?
Basically, in Kuala Lumpur, it's very huge. We do segregate ourselves towards Kota Raya, towards Pasar Seni, and many other places like the Segi Tower. That's where a lot of homeless are very concentrated at, and that's where we find it's much more easy to go there and be with them and talk to them about it.
There was a consensus done, I think, a few years back by the welfare department. There's about 2.5 to about 3,000 homeless people living with these conditions on the streets. And so the area we have covered is basically where, like you said, where most of them kind of really stay together with and all that. And they're quite diverse. They're very community-based, I realize. You know, regardless of race or religion, they stick together and they help each other.
Oh, they are like one family. That's one thing for sure. Yeah. You know, you never expect it, but when you see for yourself, they are one family.
Auntie Mumtaz, perhaps you could tell us a little bit about yourself. Where do you come from? And are you, and where are you currently based?
Pardon? I cannot hear very good.
Perhaps you could tell us a little bit about yourself.
About myself?
Yes.
Yeah.
What's your story?
I just come to KL. I don't have place to stay. And then I have one friend take me go to place. I'm sit down there for 2 years. I like everybody very nice, very kind.
And what kind of help do you need? What kind of help do you normally need, you know, just to
they
live?
They have everything. Clothes, for eating, everything have.
And for you guys, you know, what's the process of sitting down and talking with people like Auntie Mumtaz?
Well, for us, that's what we do. We meet them, we address them, we see what we could help them with. Like Auntie here, she has a job that she works at a florist. And currently we're finding a place for her to stay because it's not conducive for her to stay on the streets, especially at her ripe age, and her health is an issue, especially with the rains and the weather conditions in the city. And so our job is to find ways of not just getting them jobs or whatnot, but really getting them back on the feet, getting them out of that cycle.
By and large, do you find that there are common threads as to how people end up living on the streets, or are, you know, is each story kind of different?
I think each story is unique. We do meet a wide range of people and why they're on the streets. Some people could be, you know, family issues at home, and they just rather be out on the streets. Some of them have lost a job, and you know, some people just, you know, they get cheated out of their day pay, and I think it just says a lot about society today, where, you know, a lot of the lower income families, they are, you know, one medical emergency away from being homeless, or they could even be one late payment away from being homeless. So it is a real issue, and it does affect. It can affect anyone.
And I think a lot of young people, especially this generation out there, can relate to, because if it's not for our parents and the houses that we live in,
we will be homeless too.
We will be homeless, yeah. Because the cost of living, economics in this country is
very high. Yeah. Very high.
That being said, for most of us, you know, aside from the fact that we have a social safety net, we're also just kind of expected to go out, get a job, support ourselves. So for you guys, what's the hardest challenge in matching a homeless person to a job and to the right job and helping them keep it?
Well, it's so far, I think it was only this year that we started really in putting it into our initiative to find them jobs.
Yeah.
But it's more than just a job, because we want them to have a means or to get back into society, get them on their feet. And that could be simple as just giving them opportunities to grow within the business, giving them a place to stay that could help ease that burden a bit.
A small step makes a huge difference, like, basically.
And some of these people, their stories are amazing. They were like teachers for 30 years, but one bad incident, another, has led them to the streets. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to get them what to suit what's best of them. You know, if they are teachers, let's find them a way we can get them to still teach and use their expertise rather than just be a security guard or waiter or something like that.
I think one of the key points really is to find a willing employer who understands where these people are coming from and to really be understanding of their situation. You know, we're not going to lie and say there are cases where homeless people that we've matched the job with, they do relapse, you know, they do, you know, not show up. But I think the hardest challenge is really to get the employers to understand that they are playing a vital role, but having that patience, I guess.
And I believe it's people like us that we have to hold on to that hope. Mm. As much as they relapse, we have to
give them that opportunity, that chance.
Because if no one else believe in them,
who will?
Who will, exactly. Yeah. And sometimes, like, you know, it takes months, it takes a year to just win their trust. And you're right.
To even to get auntie, we knew auntie for years. For auntie to be here now, it's already, we are happy for that, you know.
I'm speaking today with members of the Street Feeders of KL, Tan Lee Swan, Ananthraj Rajakumar, and Gary Liu, as well as Auntie Mumtaz, a person who's currently living in Kuala Lumpur. And we are discussing feeding the homeless, the process of being a street feeder. You are listening to The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. With me today are committee members of the Street Feeders of KL, Tan Lee Swan, Ananthraj Rajakumar, and Gary Liu, as well as Auntie Mumtaz, a person who's currently living in Kuala Lumpur and has fallen on hard times. Auntie, you mentioned earlier that you're currently working. Can you tell us about your job?
I'm working in a Chinese shop. They're selling baby doll.
Are you enjoying yourself?
Yes.
Okay. And how did you get that job?
Before that, I got working for 15 years before his father passed away.
Okay.
I working there. Now, sometime I go, sometime I didn't go to work.
So for you guys, when did you first realize that the job component was as important as food in terms of helping people get back up on their feet?
Well, because feeding them, like I said, it's just part and parcel of it. You feed someone today, they'll be hungry tomorrow. But if you teach
them
to
fish,
they will take care of themselves.
Exactly.
So, really important.
Earlier, you talked about the volunteers that you're seeing on your Facebook page. How many street feeders would show up on a typical night operation?
Typically, we get about 50 to maybe 80 people. The most that we've had is about 90 plus. So, and
it's a miniature army over
it
there.
Is, yeah. You know?
And they comprise of really young working adults.
Really young.
I think there's a generation out there that's not that's going beyond that armchair critic, and they want to really experience not just what they see and hear on social media, but really be a part of it and be that change.
For us to be experienced, to actually see it, and what you really is totally different.
How are people hearing about you by and large?
Mostly word of mouth. We've also started a Facebook page
very recently. Yeah.
We've got our basic website up as well, but by and large, it's word of mouth.
Yeah, for the longest time, it's just really friends of friends.
Friends of friends coming together. Yeah.
What was the process of taking it from one feed a month to two? You know, how did that change the logistics of it? Because you're basically doubling what you do in a month, right?
Yeah.
Quite a fair amount. I think there's... in terms of volunteers, if we did not have the numbers, we would not have increased. We have been self-funding for the longest time and still are to some degree. And I guess just more recently, like you commented how what happened last year, I think that created a lot of awareness and a lot more people are starting to wake up to the fact that this is happening in our city and we should do something about it. And there are so many other street feeding groups out there who are doing this as well, which is brilliant.
What does it take to be a volunteer? You know, do you have to vet people or do you have to train them or perhaps at least explain what they need to accomplish? Or because after all, it's one thing to be handing out packets of food. It's another thing to be talking to people and to be trying to empathize and relate, I think.
Sure. I think it's open invite, so we don't screen anyone. Basically, anyone who's willing and happy to, you know, spend a couple of hours each month. To come and join us. We do have a quick briefing before each feed, so we just go through the basic things like general safety. We do give tips on how to approach homeless people it's really just to be a friendly face, a willing ear for them. Giving out food is, it's pretty basic, but it's the act of sitting down and finding out their story and finding out who they are. What we're trying to do is to break the misconception that the homeless people are, drug addicts. They are lazy. They, they are just, leeching off kindness of society. But it's really not that. So we're really opening up the invite to anyone who wants to come to see for themselves what the situation is like. It is quite a confronting sight, not going to lie. But it is something that is, eye-opening. And the people, the regulars who have come on board have really taken the aim to heart. And it's really heartwarming to see.
What are, for somebody who is thinking about kind of reaching out, if the next time they pass somebody homeless on the street and they think, okay, I want to assist them in some way, what would you suggest? You said earlier you do give briefings on the best way to approach somebody, so that I suppose you're not being too confrontational, also so that you're not being condescending. There's so many different things to this. How would you suggest going about that sort of social interaction?
I think if you come with an open mind and a big heart, that should be your guide, really, because they are people after all, aren't they?
Yeah, and to most of them, they have the social stigma that they are very scary or they are very fierce.
They're drug addicts, so they're bums and all that.
But if you actually meet them one on one, they are actually more approachable to us rather than us to them. And that's where it makes it much more easier for us to talk to them and get to know them better.
So I think I would just tell them to talk to them, to listen to them as if they're your friends, your families. And that should make it a lot easier.
Way easier.
Mutual respect, I think,
exactly,
goes a long way.
Definitely.
Where do you get your food from?
Well, we are mostly, like what Gary said, we are predominantly self-funded. A lot of the times, it's out of our own pockets. We do try to buy from small businesses. For example, one of the last feeds, we got some buns from a group of single mothers. So that's where we get our food from. And funding-wise, from our own pockets, we do get some funding sometimes. Yeah. But it's mostly from members. For example, one member, Faiz, she donates bananas on a regular basis. And Gary somehow manages to find the food and the drinks. Yeah.
Big hearts.
Are you looking forward to changing that funding system at all, and hopefully not having to take it out of your own pockets?
Oh, for sure. I mean, we welcome sponsors and anyone who's really interested to help us. We never wanted to impose and say, look, we're an NGO, we need your money and all that. But if you truly want to help us, look us up, streetfeeders.com. You can get in touch with us. There's a link to our Facebook. You could join us, especially come see, experience this.
If you're going to donate, we would also love for you to come and see where your donation goes to, rather than just donate and not ever come and see what's actually happening,
I think the biggest thing you could really sacrifice and give us is your time and your open minds to come and see this. And that's, I think, what we ask of all our volunteers. We don't ask for money, but sacrificing your time is really all the biggest thing we can ask of you.
How much does it cost at the moment to run Street Feeders a month?
Each feed is about 2000 to 2003, and that comprises mostly of the cost going to the food.
Our supplies. We want to give them a really balanced meal with water, bananas, solid food, a meat, a veggie.
Enough carbs, nutrition.
Right. Yeah.
Lee, your background is actually in consulting. How much of your expertise can be applied to the work that you're doing for Street Feeders?
Right. I think I joined Street Feeders at a quite exciting time. They've grown from a small group of friends to really, 260-odd members. And I think it does take a lot of logistics to organize groups of, up to 90 people. So I do try to help where I can to try to change the process a little bit on how to organize each feed. And apart from that, I think we've broken up into... The group of regulars have broken up into subcommittees. So there's one for PR, there's one for fundraising, there's one for welfare. And I think as they grow, there will be need for, stakeholder engagement and, planning for the future, really.
Anand, intern, you work in the food business.
Yeah.
Is food waste a problem in your industry? And, I think there's been a lot of talk, especially abroad, about ways to channel food that is otherwise going to waste to those who need it. What would you suggest?
Well, come and think about it. Ramadan is coming really, really, really soon, you know. And me working in a hotel before this, there's a lot of extra food at the end of the day. So we do hope, you know, well, if there's any hotel restaurants that are willing to give out the extra food to us, give us a call or even email us. We will help. We will help in any way we can, because the wastage is not low. It's very high, actually.
From what I understand, Street Feeders has something planned for tomorrow night. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so we're having the second of our monthly street feed tomorrow evening about 8:45.
Yeah, 8:45.
And we welcome you, you listeners who are listening out there. If you want to join us, if you want to see and experience what's happening in your own city, all you need is just a white top, bring an empty backpack to carry the supplies, and good walking shoes.
And bring yourself, that's more important than anything else. You know, and open heart, like Gary said, open mind. Bring your friends along. At least you don't need to feel very, alone. You know, if you don't know any one of us, bring your friend. At least when you get to know each of us, you'll be a family, you know.
And where is the gathering point?
Central Market. So right in the car park. We normally meet there about 8:45. There will be a short briefing at 9, and then we're off to the streets.
And if one wants to get involved or get updates, is the Facebook page the best way to go about it?
Yeah, so you could check out streetfeeders.com. There's a link to our direct Facebook group page, and we constantly update with what's happening, the people we're helping, the events that's coming up and all that. And you could find us with our emails on the website if you want to sponsor or do more than just come and see.
Yeah, I mean, we are here to help. We are much more gladly to help out, you know.
At this point, Street Feeders is still a nascent entity. What are your future plans?
Well, I would say it's definitely increase our reach to more people, and also to try to increase our people of understanding, of awareness towards the people of our country, you know.
I think it's educating them, right.
Educating.
Because there's a stigma out there, and we're trying to break that. But I think virtually for our homeless friends, it's just to find ways to help them to be more sustainable, to help themselves. I think that's the immediate goal here.
Yeah, and towards the people that is not on the streets, to get that social stigma out of their head, you know, they are still people like we are, no difference.
I think there's a cycle that we need to break. It's quite interesting to see how much society places an emphasis on having a permanent home. I think if we can break that stigma, like what Anand said, that we'll go a long way.
Thank you all very much for joining me today.
No worries.
Been speaking with members of Street Feeders of Kuala Lumpur, Tan Lee Swan, Anantha Raj Rajakumar, and Gary Liu, as well as a member of the homeless community here in Malaysia, Auntie Mumtaz. Thank you very much for joining us. And we've been discussing the process of feeding the homeless right here on Live and Learn, The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.